Yeah, so whoever raises their hand first, I'm here for as long as we need. Yeah, Lenka. Can you unmute yourself? You don't see the button? Oh, hold on, it's David's fault. In the other room, I hear him go, "Oh, that's my bad."
Okay, at work now.
Okay, awesome.
Thank you. This was really, really helpful and interesting. We had talked a few, I guess it was on the last group call about me experiencing a trigger and stuff. My question is kind of specific to like triggers versus non-triggers. Like I've really noticed that when I'm triggered from CPTSD, it's like the most painful whole body experience that any of us on this call would probably relate. And when I'm talking to my therapist, when I bring up other things that are upsetting, whether it's, my dad having a stroke and being in a hospital or preparing for a hurricane, these could all be triggers for other people, but for me, they're not. They're just kind of life things that I'm going through. And actually, oftentimes I'm told by other people that I am dealing with things better than I should for the moment. It's shadows of like, oh, you're so resilient, or oh, this doesn't be, seem to be affecting you early. And I'm like, you didn't see that I was like having a crying attack, panic attacks, and high blood pressure. You don't see all that. But my point is, like, for me, it does actually feel that the triggered memories are so much more painful than like ones that aren't, but they're not understood in society. Like, even my therapist is like, well, it makes sense to be upset about like a hurricane or your dad in the hospital. I'm like, well, didn't my triggers make sense too? So I guess my question is like, does that make sense in your experience that it's so much more painful? And like, can you, I guess it's just compassion, right? That, yeah, it makes sense that this is that much more painful.
Yeah, of course. Like, are you trying to compare that, like, what you would call a complex PTSD trigger, like you don't have the same reaction to it that you do, like your dad being in the hospital or a hurricane coming or something like that? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and it's actually the reverse. Like my dad's in the hospital, so I'm dealing with it and I'm having what I would determine like appropriate levels of emotional reaction to the event. But like my husband looked at me funny and I'm destroyed. Like, and so I guess I just want to be witness that like that it makes sense, because it seems so incongruent. Somebody posted in the chat like, who wants to talk about this stuff? Because most people don't have that experience. And here we are, like, we all have this
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, you also have to think about like your nervous system is like a bucket, okay? I don't know if you've seen me post about this on social media. It's been a while. I will teach about this as part of Feel Without Fear, but I'll go ahead and kind of give you a taste of it now. So your nervous system, like I have a glass of water here. Okay. So you can imagine, like, if this is a bucket and if it's raining outside and I have a leak in my ceiling, I'm going to put this bucket underneath the leak in the ceiling to catch the water so that the water doesn't go all over the place and ruin my floor. Right. Okay. So in this analogy, your nervous system is the bucket and the leak in the ceiling is life. Okay, it's stress, it's abandonment, it's trauma, it's the bear in the woods, like it's all of the things, and life is dripping into the bucket, and your nervous system has to hold all of it because your nervous system moderates and mitigates all of your stressors in life. Whenever your bucket starts getting really full, you lose capacity to hold more stress. Okay. So then eventually life keeps dripping into the bucket. And then if you don't empty the bucket out, meaning you're not doing some trauma processing, you're not unburdening your nervous system, you're not working through triggers, like life just keeps dripping into the bucket, And then what happens? Eventually it overflows and it gets all over the floor and it makes a mess, right? And you feel like a mess and you feel like you're failing your kids or your husband or your family or whatever. Like everything feels like a mess because you didn't have any more capacity to hold any more stress. So it sounds like your dad being in the hospital is like a big stream of water dripping from the ceiling. So then when your husband gives you one look, that's just enough of another stressor to just and you lose it.
Yeah, it does make sense. And I'm also kind of like adept, as I'm sure many of us are, at kind of like getting through life. And then when you kind of are home or behind closed doors, you kind of let it all out and you're like, actually, no, actually, like things are not okay. And it's kind of like, it's with a broad brush that I even say that because, the way that my dad has been acting since his stroke is actually triggering, but like, other elements of him just like being ill are not triggered. So there are elements that are really difficult. But thank you for saying that. It helps kind of see that these things really are related and not to just like brush them away like, oh, those don't affect me. Like they really do. They really do.
Absolutely. Yeah, I believe you. And that makes sense.
Yeah, thank
Yeah.
you.
And also, people with complex PTSD are, we're generally pretty good in a crisis
Right.
because we learned how to adapt and be in stress whenever that was
Very
like
true.
chronic, you know? So, I mean, is it a strength or a weakness? Probably both. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not super great like in certain crises. But yeah, we do tend to be like, oh, it's a crisis. I'm familiar with this. I know what to do. You know?
Yeah. And actually, along those lines, like I noticed today a ton of activation. I'm doing some planning for his long-term care. And like I feel myself going into that mode. And it feels very familiar. Like when he first had the accident, like nobody really knew what it was. And so I felt that urge response. Like I have to fly up there now. And I suppressed it because I was like, this feels like an overactive response where I need to run there immediately. Like that reminds me of times I've overreacted. And so when I'm pulling together his plan, I'm like sending my family a dissertation on why I believe these are the ones we need to. And I'm like, dude, this is activating me. And so I'm like in the moment trying to like soothe myself, take a break because I'm like triggering myself. Or I guess it's triggering my reactions in a weird way.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds really overwhelming. Like, I can't
Yeah.
imagine pulling together a long-term care plan for my parent by myself. I mean, especially if you have to get everyone else's approval for it and all of them have different opinions or whatever, but like
Yeah.
if you're the one with the power to pull together the plan, like you can certainly take other people's feedback, but like ultimately, if that responsibility rests on your shoulders, then you have to make the decision that you feel right about, but you can also still feel really dysregulated about what other people might think about that.
Yeah. I think just the fact that like here I am saying like, oh, I handle this like a champ. And then I'm like, wait, I was like severely like in physical muscular pain today from this. So it's almost like just being honest with myself and being like, yeah, this is really hard.
Yeah, so what I would encourage you to do is when you start noticing that physical muscle pain, is recognize that that's your body communicating to you. Okay. Sensation is always communication. So recognize, okay, my body's trying to tell me something. Maybe I don't know what my body's trying to tell me. Maybe you know instantly, but either way, like take the time. You are worth the time that it takes to slow down, to be present with that sensation, to hold yourself there, to notice any stories that the voice in your head is saying about it. And then discern what it is that you need and then make that choice, right? Don't push through and power through. We're all used to doing that, right? All of us with complex PTSD, we know how to fucking get through and push through a crisis. But what we weren't allowed when we were children pushing through a crisis was like that loving adult to come alongside us and be like, How are you handling this? What are you feeling? Are you okay? Oh, what, you're scared? I would told that I believe you. I totally believe you, and that makes sense that you're scared. And I'm here to reassure you, and I love you unconditionally. Like, that's, there's still a part of you that needs that, especially if she never got it. So, like, I know sometimes we can get so, that's why I talk about slowing down and like looking at your lifestyle overall, because if you don't ever have the time to just be present with that, because everything's so busy and urgent and rushed, like that's a problem. You know? Because you need time to listen to your body. You need time to meet those needs. And like something that's really hard for me to get my clients to understand is like whenever you've had like a lifetime of being disconnected from your body, like being disembodied, being disassociated, whatever, like when you start connecting with your body again, you cannot have this expectation of like, okay, I'm listening, talk. Okay, what do you want? Like, you can't have that. Like, you can't put that kind of pressure on your body. It really is. You have to treat yourself the same way that you would treat like a small child. And you can't just sit a small child on in the chair and go, okay, what are you feeling? Tell me what you need. You know, like, you can't do that. We can't do that with our bodies either. So that's why, like, repatterning our relationship to our bodies, allowing the time that it takes to be aware, to hold ourselves, to offer ourselves compassion, to notice the stories in our heads. Like, that is a process that cannot be rushed through. And I'm not saying it has to take hours and hours, but you deserve a few minutes of that. And then maybe just meeting your body in those moments gives her permission to like relax, because she's like, oh, okay, you've got me. Okay, just checking. You know?
Thank you so much. I really
You're
appreciate
welcome.
it.
Yeah, of course. Nicole, I saw you had your hand up and then it went down. Do you have a question? Okay, maybe not. Anyone else?
I did have a question. I just couldn't get childcare today, so my daughter was running around wildly, and I was not sure if there was going to be a calm moment for me to ask, but she has calmed down in the meantime. So I do have a question. It's actually a really good timing to have this call because my partner and I, we decided to take a period of separation, not to like end our relationship fully, but I've been just getting so triggered in our relationship from my past, like abusive relationship triggers and some of my childhood triggers with my parents, that like, that analogy of the cup, like it's like loud noises, like scratchy surfaces on my clothes, like I can't handle any of it. Like my daughter was just screaming and I was like, breathe, it's fine. Okay. It feels good that we made that decision. It's like very sad as well. But we've been like in limbo around what our relationship, like the next step in our relationship is. And it's been hard for him to hold space, the hold the space I need, and it's been hard for me to hold the space he needs. So we decided, let's take some space. And as I've been identifying these triggers, like, oh, is the space necessary? Is it not? We both came to the point that it's necessary. So that's not what the question's about. But the question is about, I know we've spoken a lot that people with complex PTSD will say, like, oh, like, I don't have it. Like, I don't have it that bad. And I notice that because, like, I'm really digging into the childhood triggers because I know the childhood triggers are coming up in my relationship with him a lot, along with the past relationship abuse. And the thing with my family is that like they weren't so overtly abusive. It was that like I in a way, do you want me to eat it? Okay, sorry. I'll eat it. It was that they it was like a spiritual abuse thing where like I had to, baby, do you want this? I may need to just wait. I guess is where I can part of this question. It was that like my mom loved me and the love was undeniable. It was that what she was taught was that I had to practice Islam or she would go to hell. So she would be afraid when I would question And like her way of dealing with that was like shut it down. So like I have a lot of abandonment wounds from that. Like I remember when I was a kid, she had gotten overwhelmed and she was about to like move back to Indonesia because that's where we're from, or where she's from. I was born here. Or when I told her I was questioning things and I just didn't believe in it anymore, my dad had told me that I could never tell her. And so I kept it in for a year. So when it finally came out, it was like this huge explosion. And then she said I wasn't her daughter anymore. And then she gave me the silent treatment the rest of the night. And then the next day it was like it never happened. So like I decided, okay, like I guess I'm just gonna fake it to like stay okay. So yeah, I just, there's sometimes moments where I'm like, do I consider, like, it's not abuse, but it's trauma. So yeah, I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that. Cause I imagine some people may like think, cause like, I feel like a lot of my situations aren't like, it's so cut and dry that it's like, oh, this was like abusive or this was traumatic. It's like somewhere in the middle, I feel like. And I know you've spoken that like, we can't compare, but yeah, I've just been like getting kind of stuck on this one.
Yeah. So, like, at what age were you whenever your mom was like, if you don't believe in Islam, like I'm going to go to hell. Like, was it like, what age were you when that was happening? And was it spoken to you in like a threatening way?
I was 14.
Okay. And was it spoken to you in a threatening way?
Yes.
Okay. So that is abusive. Like, a parent threatening to disown their child over spiritual or religious beliefs is abusive.
Right.
Because it instills that fear in you, which it sounds like you figured out how to adapt by faking it. So you had to do something that was inauthentic to you in order to retain the love and attachment of your mother. Yeah. That's abandonment, abuse, and neglect. So it would make sense if in any relationship going forward, if that pattern repeats where you perceive, if I don't be who they need me to be, I'm going to get left. Is that a repetitive pattern for you?
Definitely. Yeah.
So that makes sense.
And it's showing up in my relationship with my partner because, you know, he also deals with complex trauma. So he really like craves someone to actually be able to hold space for his anger, his grief, and all of that.
Of course.
And because of my window of tolerance with all of the, like, because I basically, like, I had a really challenging relationship that I spoke to you on the one-on-one session that I left pretty much right before I met my current partner. And I never really had the time to like work through it before I met him. Yeah, I just, I'm finally starting to dig into the trauma from my past abusive relationships. So like, I really don't have the space when he's going through his stuff. And like, I want to, like so much of me wants to, and I like always feel like a failure when I can't. And I just had to tell him today, I was like, I actually just can't be the partner you need me to be at the moment.
Yeah.
Like I want to in the future, but for right now I can't.
And that's so honest. Like there's so many partners that can't say that to their partner. But like the fact that you can be so honest about that is really, really a beautiful thing. Like you've recognized your capacity. You've recognized that you've hit your limit. And so holding any more of his stuff for him is like too much water coming into the bucket and it's overflowing all over the place. And so like if this period of separation kind of allows you to like turn off the water that's dripping into the ceiling and offload some of the water that your nervous system is holding, some of that burden that your nervous system is carrying to create more capacity so that then you can be a space holder for him, like what a beautiful thing.
Yeah. So I am celebrating in a sense today. It's like a sad celebration, like a
sure,
bit of relief.
Really
and then also, yeah, but like we've been in this limbo space for a while. So it feels good that like we're talking about triggers today and I can talk about what's going on because
yeah.
I tend to not speak about stuff. So it was just great
sure.
timing. So thanks. Yeah. And I appreciate you being able to be like, that is abusive. Like just because my mom loves me, I don't have to think of her as like a bad or abusive mom, but like that instance was abusive.
I mean, my mom loved me too, and she still left me on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Right? Like, my mom loved me
Right.
too, and she still gave me the silent treatment all the time. You know? It's complex. That's why it's called complex PTSD. So Nicole, if you want to check the chat, Deborah in the chat, it said, my partner and I both have complex PTSD if you ever want to chat. So sounds like somebody that you could connect with, and you guys could bounce some stuff off of each other. And that might be really supportive for you to have someone else to talk to.
Awesome. Yeah, let's talk, Deborah. I'll put a way to contact me in the chat.
Okay, perfect.
And I'll pass the baton because my daughter is screaming, but I just felt like it was very important for me to share today. And I just wanted to, even though the situation isn't perfect.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. I think you're headed in the right direction.
Thanks, yeah. Lindsay. Appreciate
for sure. Of course. Yeah, Brandy, you're next.
Okay. Hi. First of all, I wanted to tell you that I have your voice in my head sometimes, which cracks me up. It's always...
You're not the only one, babe.
I've heard. It's common, but I laugh at it because it's definitely your voice, not mine. And it makes me laugh a lot because it's, what is the...
Isn't it
makes
sense.
It makes sense.
Oh, good. You got that one in your head. Awesome. I love it.
And I laugh every time it happens. So thank you.
Yeah, of course.
The second one is I had an instance of triggering of all different kinds of things on Monday night. And it was just like a family event that I invited my adult kids to supper, and we had a good supper. And then the two of them decided to harass me over something. And it just, probably on a good day, I could have taken it, but I think I was like stressed out and it triggered me, which is fine. Not a big deal. But then I decided, like, then my body went into, my feelings. I was angry and hurt and upset. And I left the room and not tossed my chair, but kind of flipped it over and went to my room, slammed my door. And I wanted to have feelings. And I'm like, okay, I am upset and I'm hurt and I'm angry and I'm frustrated. And then it all left. Like, the dissociation happened, right?
Yeah.
And that was really frustrating. It was like an alien ship came in and just like swiped it all clean, and it was just gone. And I was so frustrated because of that. And I don't know how to stop that. How do I stop that? Like, how, my question, I guess, is how do I keep the feelings going once they start happening?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So what is your relationship with anger and boundaries like?
Those are very naughty things.
Okay. So then the dissociation makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if your body has this story that anger is bad, you're bad if you're angry, showing any kind of expression of anger is bad and wrong.
Yeah.
Then you can logically be like, oh, I'm angry. I'm angry. Finally, I'm angry. I can have a big anger reaction. Like, I can go do this. Like, and like, but your body's like, no, bitch, this is unfamiliar. Like,
yeah.
Right. Bitch. Like, so like, I understand that you're frustrated. It makes sense why you would be frustrated about that. Also remember that frustration is an expression of anger, or it is an emotion of anger. So you can do something with that frustration. One really great way for any of you who are like, oh yeah, I have the same relationship with anger. It's bad. It's wrong. I don't allow myself to express anger because I have all these stories about it, is, when you feel that anger come up, which it sounds like it was a big, fast energy, you know, you didn't want to have the interaction or the conflict right then. You needed some space, which is great. If you can communicate, I need some space, even better. Okay. Mm-hmm. Especially with your more intimate people, partner, friends, things like that. But if you get back to the room or whatever, and you've shut the door and, you know, you're punching a pillow or throwing stuff around or yelling into something or whatever, if you notice that rage is starting to leave, start doing any kind of resistance movement. So, like squats, like start doing squats, just up and down, like really go at it. Push-ups, same thing. You can also like push against a wall as hard as you possibly can, because doing that resistance movement will reactivate that anger in you. So if you do some squats for, you know, a minute or so, you'll probably start feeling that anger coming back. Now, that's not a guaranteed way to get that anger to come back. Because again, you may still need practice with holding and channeling anger because it is so unfamiliar and because you do have so many stories about it. But that is one way that you can try to like tap back into it when you lose it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can be like, oh, isn't it interesting? I lost the anger. It'll happen again. I'll get another chance to practice. Right?
Yeah.
Anything else, dear?
No, that was perfect. Okay. Thank you.
Well, you tapped into some anger, so I'm grateful for that. Even if it didn't last very
seconds.
Long.
Seconds.
Yeah, good. That's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, you're so welcome. Let's see, Deborah, you are next.
Okay. This is kind of bouncing off of, I think, Jen, who went first. But I had similar experience kind of come up advocating for my son for some like medical hard things a few years ago.
It was Lenka.
Oh, Lenka, sorry. Yeah.
That's okay.
And I noticed like during it, I would get comments from everybody like, wow, you're so strong. You're handling yourself so well. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I just now realized. It's like an inception level. That was like feeding my good girl stuff. And so I was relying on other people's feedback of, you're handling this so well, that I would almost gaslight myself.
Absolutely.
And it's like, you're supposed to be strong. You're supposed to be brave. You're supposed to power through. And I mean, my son does have some follow-up needs. It's not nearly as urgent right now. And I'm finding myself having emotional flashbacks. Like I probably cried talking to these sweet, poor secretaries, you know, just from not being believed or whatever. But just kind of not like a warning, but like even 5 years down the road, I'm having feelings come up that I didn't process back then. So take the time to break down in private, you know, like take the time to like, don't gaslight yourself. I think sometimes people don't know what to say in those situations. So they are like, oh, wow, you're so brave. You're so strong. Just because it can be hard for people to talk about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I don't know. That was just like a weird inception moment. I was like, I'm doing it for the, I care more about how I look I'm doing than how I'm actually feeling.
That's so real. So that was such great awareness. Like seriously, I'm sure that's resonating with every person here. It's resonating with Lenka too. Yeah. Thank you for bringing awareness to that for sure. And for sharing.
Yeah.
Anything
and
else?
I think there's two Deborahs here, but I'm the Deborah who my partner and I both have CPTSD.
Okay.
We've been married 13 years and the first 10 years we were triggering each other back and forth, and there is change possible. We've both, you know, been in therapy and like we are communicating in a way that I would have never imagined. So that space can be amazing and just continue to work on yourself.
Yeah, 100%. That's beautiful. Good work. Jen De La Rosa, not Jen Heller.
Okay. I had to switch. You're calling me Jennifer. I'm like, oh, I'm in trouble.
Oh.
I'm kidding.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. So yesterday I had a pretty crazy, profound conversation with my father, and my father and I do not have a good relationship. Just his presence triggers me. Like I know like everything in my body is just tight. Right. And so lately I've been paying attention to that. I've had massages like every other week and going to the chiropractor because I'm just so tense. And the doctor tells me like, what is going on? You're just so guarded. Right.
Yeah.
So we're having lunch and I don't even know how we got on the topic of his parents not being affectionate to him and, you know, him not being affectionate with us. And he kind of was like, I don't know how you don't remember when you were younger, but you were loved. And, you know, I'd be there anytime you need me. And it's like, okay. And
sounds
I'm just
like a typical boomer response.
Right. And so I'm just listening to him, right? And I mean, inside of me, I'm just like, everything is just boiling up, right? And I'm like, oh, well, maybe you should talk to somebody about that, right? I just told him that, and he was like, no, that's a bunch of nonsense, and he's like, a bunch of quacks and all that stuff, and like he just went off about it. And he started telling me like, you were loved, and we used to play, and we used to call you all these things. And it's like, oh, when you used to call me Buckwheat, and you used to call me all these names, like he and all of these things. I was like, I have a complex about my skin because I was darker than everyone in my family, and they would tell my brother that I wasn't his sister because I was darker. And I was like, that's not funny. And he's like, oh, well, that's just how we played. Everybody would call me fat, and he would like say words in Spanish and stuff. I'm like, it's not funny. It's not funny. And because it's like, I have such a complex about how I look because they would always nitpick and stuff that like everything, right? And he just like, I was like, it's not funny. It's not funny. It's not funny then. It wasn't funny when I was, the day I was born. You tell them that, oh, they put me in the oven. Everybody was saying that. The whole family did that to me. My parents, well, my dad, not my mother. My dad did it. His whole family did it. Everything. It's like, it's not funny. It wasn't funny then. It's not funny when I was a teenager. It's not funny that you told my friends that and that they did that too. It's not funny. And he's like, he didn't apologize. He's like, well, that's just how we play around, right? That's just how we played around. And it just, we had a big old conversation yesterday just about so many things. And I mean, I was exhausted by the end of the day because it's like just being in his presence is enough. But then we were starting to talk about some deep shit, but he would. Every time that I would say something, he would just come back and like not let me get a word in. And, I'm grieving the loss of my mom. They were separated for 20 years, and my dad has done some pretty ugly shit, like to me, growing up. He spanked us whenever we failed, we got the belt. So if we came home with a F, if we lied, we got the belt. And that turned me into a perfectionist. At one point, I used to even say, like, I'm kind of glad that I was like that because it makes me this way, right? But now it's like, I'm always just, I have to get things done, have to get things done. I've been on leave for almost 10 weeks and I can't sit still. And so I wrote the other day because I have be still, which is my Bible verse. On my wrist, I can't fucking be still. I'm a hypocrite. I kept telling, I'm like, I'm a fucking hypocrite. Like, I can't be still. Anytime it's like, I have to find something to do. I can't stay home because I'm triggered at home. It's just like everything. And it's like everything is coming out now. And I mean, I have the awareness, I'm listening to my body, but it's like, I don't know how, if I can even contain all of
Well,
it.
yeah,
Like,
what if you didn't contain it?
yeah.
What if you just let it all fall apart?
Yeah.
Like, you're literally like the structures that have built you into the person that you are. You're now gaining awareness to why those structures are there. And you're going, oh, that's really fucked up. I don't want to be this person. I don't want to have the fear of the belt in my body. To the point that as a fully grown adult woman, I can't be still and do nothing because some part of me is still terrified that I'm gonna get beaten.
Yeah. And
Like,
I don't even know if I'm terrified about the beating part. It's just more like I'm afraid of failure. And it's like I have this weird like thing, like, do I need to make my dad proud? I've told him it's like, hey, I like being not working right now. I'm not as stressed. I'm practically detoxing from not working and I can't even sit still. And he's like, well, you better not quit that job. It's a really great job. You make a lot of money and all of this stuff. And it's, very, very lucky. And it's like, yeah, I get it, but it's killing me. Like, there's just everything is killing me.
I mean, that's something that that generation doesn't get it though. I mean, this, like, I did a poll on my Instagram stories a few months ago where I was like, if you're Gen X or a millennial and you're on what you would call a healing journey, like, and then I ask all these questions about, like, have you tried to talk to your parents about this? What is your parents' typical reaction? And it was like overwhelmingly, I mean, I'm talking, this is these polls that I did, like, I had hundreds of people participating. It was the most participation I've ever had on any poll I've ever done ever. So hundreds of people were like, yep, I'm Gen X or millennial and I'm on a healing journey. And then overwhelmingly, like, and either I can't talk to my parents about this or I don't talk to my parents about this because of their reaction will either be like, they'll get really defensive, they shut down, or there's just no common language to even talk to each other about it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just really important to name the generational differences. And like, that's not to make boomers bad and us good. Like, that's not what I'm trying to do, but what you're experiencing is so common for all of us in this generation who have parents of that age. It's like, getting the good paying job was everything. Having this appearance of success was everything. Being a straight A student and being the best at everything was so common. I mean, I have that conditioning. So many people here, I'm sure, probably have that conditioning. Deborah is a boomer and she's on a healing journey. Well, you are a rare gem, Deborah. We all know that you're a rare gem. So I just think it's important to name that and to also name that, like boomers like Deborah are kind of rare, you know, they really are, because I think it's really painful for their generation to see that they're getting older in life. And now their kids are coming to them and they're like, hey, you did this and it hurt. And like, I'm not mad at you and I still love you, but like, here's how it affected me. And their instinct is to just be like, well, you were loved. What do you mean? You were loved, you know? And you're like, but I didn't feel love when you made fun of me for how dark my skin was.
No, I mean, I had no love, no affection.
Yeah.
I mean, my parents, if like maybe we graduated college or something, that's when they said that they loved us. It's very, very rare. I mean, that was like exactly with my mom. I didn't know, you know, and that's like, but I mean, I knew she loved me, but she never really said it because they had non-affectionate parents. They were not affectionate parents. And it's just, and when you said, oh yeah, we do really well in a crisis. Fuck yeah, I do. I mean, I can turn on like a machine. And it's like, I was like, oh my God. It's like, you said something so profound. It's like, I am. I mean, I handled all the shit when my mom died. And it just, my grandmother just died like in March. And that's his mom. And he was telling me, he's like, what did he say? Oh, because I had to go pick up antidepressants for my daughter and she's going to start taking them. I don't think she started yet. And he was like, well, what does she need that for? And it's like, I take them. Right. And he's like, well, what do you need that for? I was like, anxiety. And he's like, well, I wonder where you get that from. And I'm just like, really,
really,
really. It's like, he can't talk to me. Like if he even tries to feel emotion, he's like, he shakes and it's crazy. And I'm like, you really should talk to somebody.
Yeah. But they're not going to, like, it's
and
like,
and he's had so many health issues. I took him yesterday to go get a stimulator put in his back and it just, it's crazy how many issues that he has. It's just, it was a lot. So I've been walking like 4 miles every day because, and I'll go probably walk after this call, but it's just like, I couldn't, just yesterday with all of that, I contained myself. I didn't fly off the handle with him, but I just told him like, hey, that hurt. And, you know, it sucks because I saw my mom, everything that she kept inside of her ate her alive and it killed her. And it's doing that to him. His body is literally fighting back. You know, giving, it's like, I have those things within me as well. And it's like, I don't want to be like that anymore. I see where I've done that to my oldest daughter and she can't feel, or she doesn't know what to do with her emotions. They're all over the place. Yeah. And the little one, it's like, I just hold her and I'm all lovey with her because that's what
you're
wanted.
You're doing it differently than you did it the first time around, right? Like that's all.
Yeah.
You're more than welcome to show your older daughter any of these replays and like talk about it with her, if that gives you guys a common meeting ground for like talking about these things. I mean, I have a child who doesn't feel his feelings either.
Yeah.
Like, and that's really, really hard.
Yeah, and I told him yesterday, it's like, you know, your mother was on antidepressants for 30 years. And he's like, what? And I said, yeah. I was like, your sister told me that. My aunt told me that, you know, the day that she passed away. And he's like, well, I guess that would make sense because, you know, when his sister died like 30 years ago and she had Alzheimer's. And it's just, and she lived till 95. Wow. But it just, he did not know that she was on antidepressants. And it's like, it's a very common thing. It's a very common thing. It's not quack shit. Like I just told him that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that, I read and learn. It's like, you know,
that generation also, like, I mean, you have to realize that it wasn't until like the late 90s, early 2000s that even just going to therapy started to be like destigmatized. Like there was so much stigma around, oh, you see a shrink, you know, like you can even watch movies from like the 70s and 80s and 90s. And when they talk about people like seeing shrinks and, you know, things like that, like it was a derogatory thing. If you were in therapy, it was something that you had to keep hidden from people because if they knew, like, oh my gosh. One thing that stuck out to me though, this is a really little thing, but my advice to any of you is like, if you are getting on antidepressants or anti-anxiety meds or your kids are or whatever, like, you don't have to share that information with your parents or anybody in your family that's going to have an opinion that's not supportive. Like I have another client who just started taking an antidepressant and she's really close to a family member who picks up her kids from school every day. And she told the family member and the family member is in that generation and was just like, well, you don't, why do you need that? Like, why don't you don't need that? That's, you know, and I was like, you know, why did you tell her that you were even taking this medication? Yeah. She's like, well, I thought we were close. Like I wanted her support, but I should have known better because of course she doesn't agree with it. Or of course she thinks that it's like, you know, stupid or whatever. And I was like, you know, if you even have an inkling that a family member is going to be anything but supportive when you tell them something tender like that, just like, don't tell them. You know, you don't have to keep telling your parents everything. You don't have to, they don't have to know everything that's going on in your life. Especially if they're not going to be supportive, because what your daughter needs and what you need is not someone who's critical and snarky or sarcastic or whatever. Like if I was your mom, I would want to be like, or your dad, I would want to be like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Is there anything I can do to support you while you do this? Like that's what you need. Right? You don't need the snark and the sarcasm and the criticism and all of that.
Yeah. It's just crazy. It's like, but all these things and all these gates are opening. I've noticed that. Like, it's
well, welcome to Feel Without Fear. It really like turns the lock and opens the door.
Yes. I've been doing a lot of stuff and it's like, holy cow. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
All while not knowing what the hell happened to me when I was little, but still, it's just, you know. Well,
you know enough to know that, like, if you knew nothing else, but the fact that your parents told you you were put in an oven and that you weren't really your brother's sister, like, that would be enough, right? Like, that's enough. You don't have to piece together the rest to know, like, wow, that was really fucked up.
Yeah.
And I felt unloved because of it. And I've felt bad about myself ever since because of these messages. My stepdad, like I have an anterior pelvic tilt. Like I have a pretty pronounced anterior pelvic tilt. So when I stand naturally, my butt sticks out like quite a bit because my back tilts so much. And my stepdad used to make comments about that and be like, he would literally say, like, I feel ashamed to say this, but he would say that I had a nigger booty. Like he would say that to me and he would say that he would be like, you can bounce a quarter off that ass. Or he would say I had a Coke bottle butt because like a Coke bottle, it's like a straight neck and then it comes out. So like he would make comments about my body like that. And like, I thought there was something wrong with my back because my pelvis tilts forward and my butt sticks out more, but it's just the way my body is. Like there's nothing wrong with me, but he made it mean something like gross and almost like sexualized. You know what I'm saying? Like it was just So I get it. I totally understand that. And he like made racist comments about it, and it's so fucked up. And like so inappropriate.
Everything. And then, I mean, that was my skin. It's like, that's just like boobs, no butt, all of these things. It's like, I've had all of that redone because, and I'm still not fucking happy with my body. And it's just over all of that, plus all the bullying and stuff that they never knew I went through because I couldn't talk to them.
Yeah. It just, no amount of surgery or boob jobs is ever going to replace the love and total acceptance that you needed from your parents.
So we have to give it to ourselves.
Yes, ma'am. That's the work. And you get to be angry and you get to grieve over not receiving it from the people you were supposed to receive it from. That's a huge important step in the process that you can't skip over. You may not even be able to give yourself that love and that affirmation until you've processed that rage and that grief for all the ways that your parents fucked up.
Yeah. And I think not the other woman that went on and said that with the relationship, right? It's like, and not processing prior relationships. I'm in the same boat.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm in the same boat. I haven't processed any of my old stuff. And it's spilling over into everything today.
Yeah.
So,
I believe you. And I know that's really hard.
Yeah.
And I hope over the next few months, you get some more like tools to help you through that. Like, I mean, I know you will, but
yeah,
I know you will. Oh, thanks for sharing, Jen.
Yep. I've been drinking my Tulsi too.
How are you liking it?
It's good. I like it. I'm not doing any teas or anything, any caffeine anymore. So it's like, it does taste good. And I think he told me like a third cup though, to diffuse it. Like
a third cup of herbs.
Yes. Cause you said a strong infusion, but I just been doing like 2 tablespoons. Does it matter?
I mean, the more herbs you use, the stronger it is, the more potent it is. So the more benefits you're going to get from it.
Okay.
But if it's like too strong of a taste for you, you can still make a really strong infusion. And then just like, if the infusion is a quart and you use a third of a cup of herbs, yes, it's going to be very strong. I think that the flavor of Tulsi, is kind of,
it's like cinnamon.
I think it's really good with lemon juice. So I like squeeze a juice of a whole lemon in there with it. And then I add some stevia or some maple syrup or whatever I have. Cause I like sweet things. So I like adding like different things to it to kind of,
I drink it like an iced tea.
So do I. I drink it
cold. Yeah. And then just put like the sweetener.
Yeah.
Not sugar, but like regular, like stevia or the monk fruit.
Yep. If you're not noticing that it's like helping you feel like calmer, clearer, like less cortisol in your body or whatever, then it's probably not strong enough.
Okay. It's probably doing something because I didn't lose my shit with my dad yesterday.
Well, so. It's never just the drink, right? Ever. You guys know how I feel about the magic fucking drink.
Yeah. Okay.
Deborah says that lavender flowers are also good to add. So if you like that flavor. Thanks. Jen. Miss Deborah. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thanks, Jen. Thank you. I relate so much. So I'm a boomer. kind of on the cusp. I was born in 1962 and the official Gen X start is 1964. But yeah, you know, we had all that stuff with my dad as well. But you know, later in life, when he actually showed up to be present in my life, when I was 50 years old, he was much more available and much more willing to talk about things. And like when my daughter passed away, it was, you know, it was like this stranger who was my dad, you know, because I could talk about a lot of stuff. And, you know, he'd walk me through a lot of instances and, you know, tell me not to be so hard on myself and all that other stuff. And I'm thinking, well, it sounds really good right now, but damn, that would have been nice like 50 years ago. So I think that's part of my struggle right now with where I'm at, trying to process, you know, little Johnny is a real piece of work. You know, that kid on the bus.
I do know that kid on the bus. Yeah. You're getting to know him a little better, huh?
So, it's weird trying to process the before along with the grief. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sunday will be 1 year since he passed away. Mm-hmm. So, but anyways, being a boomer, yeah, it's tough. Because everyone in my family, well, let me see. My sister and I are estranged since 2011, and that's a whole nother story. And Lindsay, I'm probably going to have to book some private sessions with you because there's just a lot.
I have two coaching spots available right now.
Yeah, I got your email. I'm going to look at it. I know I said I'm retired, but I did just accept another contract in Nashville. It's only 2 hours up the road, which is not a big deal, but it's only 6 weeks, and it's a passenger to Medivac conversion on a King Air. So I can knock that out in 6 weeks and, you know, be home. Go back to
doing. She's like, I can convert an airplane in 6 weeks. Like, you're such a badass, Deborah. Oh my God.
So, no, but it's exciting, you know. Medivacs are real near and dear to my heart because we just need more of them. And that's actually one of my dream goals, you know, if I can ever get past all of the blockades and spider webs that I've set up around myself. I would love to have my pilot's license and have a medevac plane. Aww. You know, to be able to get people to healthcare when they need it. Mm-hmm. It's a huge, huge, like, fire in my heart burning. So it's really cool. But anyways, it's a lot of stuff, and it's hard because, so my sister and I are estranged, and my brother is a complete and total stranger since my dad left. You know, there's zero relationship with him. You know, he's always very kind and I guess brotherly, if you will. He's 7 years younger than me, but it does kind of hurt that, you know, I don't have anything against him. You know, I love him.
Sure.
But like my aunties, all my dad's sisters, they're still alive, but they're all, you know, of course they came from the dysfunctional family. And, you know, if you try to talk to them, they tell you, oh, well, you know, you just deal with it. You just, you know, pull up your bootstraps, put on your big girl pants, you know, just all that stuff. And it's tough because there's really no one to talk to. And I think for me, you know, I'm going to tell you, I was a little bit triggered when you said that one part that you're just not going to heal without relationships. And honestly, there's no one in my life. My son, the only one who's, you know, that I have any kind of a relationship with, he's, you know, he's dealing with his own stuff, and his wife is a first responder and, you know, all that. And so, you know, it's, and there's a lot of stuff going on. You know, everybody knows about my daughter. What everybody doesn't know is I have another son. I don't even know if he's dead or alive. Mm-hmm. I don't have any way to reach him.
I'm so sorry.
You know, he's a drug addict. He chose the Silk Road. And so, my gosh, you know, trying to heal and trying to just have somebody to talk to.
Absolutely.
You know, I have like one really, really good friend, and she's sweet. We hang out, we have a good time. When she's not working, she's not going to leave aviation until I think she's probably going to push herself to 67, but whatever, that's her choice. But she's like, well, baby girl, just give it to Jesus. He's going to take care of everything.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So my question is, because, I mean, I know where I'm at. I mean, I have no feelings, really. I can't feel anything.
Except you kind of teared up a little bit earlier when you were talking.
I did, but you saw how quickly I shut it down. But I wanted to keep talking while everyone's listening. So, but I did notice something today that was kind of strange. So I'm trying to, secure temporary housing. And so I don't know if anybody's heard of this Furnace Finder app, because Airbnb has gotten kind of ridiculous, but Furnace Finder was started by nurses for nurses. So I'm just trying to get everything set up and get everything. And it was like five times I kept trying to get it to verify my phone number. The whole email thing worked, but the phone number wouldn't work. And every time I would go and click the link that they texted me, it would do this loop and take me back to the, find a property thing. And then everything in my profile was erased again.
Oh my gosh.
So I went through this five times and I got so mad, and I definitely did. I was like,
so frustrating.
And that, it was frustrating, but it was like, wow. So where did that come from and why was it so powerful?
Nice.
No ideas at all, but
you're asking the right question.
Yeah, I have absolutely no idea. The only thing that kind of lingering is that, coming from my childhood, I know that I've had control issues. That's a survival skill, sure. Just because I couldn't control the situation and it was frustrating for me. Mm-hmm. I that's the only thing that I'm coming up with. But anyways, I just really, if anybody has any ideas, because I would really like to have somebody talk to.
Well, everybody here.
Uh-huh.
Is available. I mean, people who are available, if anyone is willing to be a friend to Deborah and talk to her, whether that's chat, email, texting, phone calls, Zoom, whatever, please put whatever information you would like for her to have of yours in the chat. Is that okay, Deborah, for you to have?
Yes, please. Because, it's hard for someone like me to make friends.
Sure.
In a town, I mean, I've been in Chattanooga for 3 years, but I work nights and I work 60 hours a week. But mm-hmm. I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't eat restaurant food.
That's okay.
And it's really, really tough to figure out where to go. So I think I might sign up for dance lessons.
That sounds amazing.
That I would enjoy doing, and it would take you out of the situation of having to eat or drink, right?
Yep.
So, that's now, do I need to copy these down? And you ladies, thank you so much. That's so amazing. Do I need to copy these down, or will these be in the replay?
I don't think they'll be in the replay because the chat. Okay. The chat file, the way it downloads, is really difficult to read. Okay. So yeah, write those down. We're not getting off anytime soon. There's still people with questions.
So anyways, thanks for listening. But that's just really kind of where I'm at. When you said that, I was like, the first thing that went off in my mind is, see, I told you.
Ah, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
You can't do this.
No, but you can.
I know, but I'm just saying that was that voice in my head.
Sure. That's great awareness.
And don't get me wrong. I enjoy my company. I never run out of things to do. Yeah. Okay. I'm a very creative person. I've got a lot of stuff going on. And, but I really do get tired of talking to myself.
Of course. Yeah, that makes total sense.
You know, and it would be so wonderful to just be able to talk to somebody else who's on a healing journey where we could kind of bounce things off of each other, or, you know, maybe, you know, share love and support.
Absolutely.
I mean, it would be nice. Yeah. I don't ever feel lonely. I really don't. But I do feel that it would just really be nice to be able to talk to somebody sometimes, you know, that isn't, you know, on a schedule with a dollar sign and sign to it, you know. I mean, yeah. it's, but I'll let you know about dance lessons if I sign up. But of course, okay. That'll have to be later because I'm going to Nashville, but I am excited about Nashville for 6 weeks. So
yeah, that'll be fun. Well, you've got Brandy, Beth, and Jen, who are all saying, all right, so, reach out.
Yes, awesome. Thank you, ladies, for listening. I appreciate your attention, and I appreciate your love and support.
Anytime.
And I am so stinking glad I'm here because it has been long and lonely until, you know, a couple Good. Years ago, just trying to work it all out. So I appreciate it.
We're here for you, Deborah. We're glad you're here, too. Okay, Jamie.
So you kind of blew my mind a little bit tonight, like a little bit like a paradigm shift with the triggers. It's kind of like almost like spiraling into behaviors or like adaptive behaviors. Mm-hmm. So I guess my question kind of is like, now I'm wondering, am I triggered by something, or is my cup filling up and overflowing, or do those have to be separate?
I don't think they have to be separate.
Okay. Cause now that made me see myself in a totally different way. And I'm wondering, I know in like one of the last calls, I said that I can't find my center. And I wonder if like, I felt like life was just like thrashing me around, but I kind of also wonder if I was triggered in that moment by something that I'm not fully like haven't pinpointed yet. Okay. But yeah, definitely wanted to like process that out loud and ask you if they had to be separate or if there was like a chicken and egg scenario where one happened and then the other. But I have a second.
If you have complex PTSD, like this is what I want everyone to hear. If you have complex PTSD and you have not brought awareness to those patterns, noticed where the pattern came from and how you adapted to survive, and unburdened your nervous system of that trauma energy, your bucket is already fucking full by the time you get to be an adult. Okay. Yeah. So like you may live the first 20 years of adulthood, like I did, totally unaware of why you are the way you are, why you're so anxious, why you can't stop cleaning the house, even when it's not dirty, why you have to vacuum and leave tracks on the carpet and nobody can walk through it because that's what makes you feel safe. Like shit like that. You don't realize that all these little things that you're doing that seem like normal, or maybe they don't seem normal or whatever, is all in an effort of you being like, I'm fucking full and I'm just trying to like make it so that I don't overflow all over the place. So yes. The disadvantage of complex PTSD, especially that originates from childhood, is that by the time we get to adulthood, we already don't have resilient nervous systems. We already don't have space and capacity in our nervous systems. Like, that's the huge, huge disadvantage and disservice that our parents did us.
Yeah. And 100% I relate to that. And I'm still trying to completely unwind why I am the way that I am. Like, I've pinpointed a few things. Like, my mom had severe depression. So there was at least two times in my childhood where she was on the couch and she did not get up for, I don't even know, it felt like weeks. But either of my grandmas would have to like pitch in and take us to school, cook us dinner. So I definitely think I have like emotional abandonment wounds from that, where because my mom was very nurturing, very present. And then it would just like I didn't even really fully know that she was struggling as hard as she was. And then I would get mad at her for being there, but kind of like not being there, which kind of leads me into my second question. I do know that I have that emotional abandonment wound, but like with my dad, typical Gen Xer, like no feelings whatsoever, nothing below surface level. Can that cause an emotional abandonment wound if I never had it from him in the first place? Cause it wasn't like taken away because I never had it.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Yes. Whether you had it and it was taken away or you never had it, you were still abandoned.
Okay.
And something that can be really, really, really difficult is when you are met in an emotional situation by a caregiver who isn't reacting over the top big, but their affect is just flat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like yes. that. I mean, for me, I would rather you fucking yell at me than meet me with just like blank fucking nothing. I would rather you yell at me because at least that tells me where you're at. When you meet me with this like blank, passive, like flat affect, all I have are my thoughts that are just like winding out of control, being like, oh my God, what is happening here? What is this person thinking? What are they feeling? I don't know because I can't figure it out because they're not giving me the communication cues so that I know what they're feeling. Like it's a whole ass thing.
Okay. And he was pretty explosive, but it was like all or nothing and you never knew what you were going to get from one day to the next. So there was also walking on eggshells and I know that ties into codependence and all, it just is like a big ball of yarn, but I think I just needed that validation that it didn't have to be there and then be taken away. So it kind of came from both parents. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
Okay.
Totally. Makes sense.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. Jen Heller.
Well, hi, everybody. It says Jay, but my name is Jen. And just like the other Jen, when somebody full names me, I just don't know what to do about that.
Well, I have to distinguish between the two of you somehow because you both also have dark hair.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is, I think she's from San Antonio and I grew up there. So
hilarious.
So I did want to, I have two things. I wanted to comment on what Jen said, though, because it sounds like she had a history of spanking as a child, I think. Mm-hmm. And she talked about how she has trouble being still. And I have that same affliction. But a lot of people see it as a gift because I can manage time well. I am very capable, like so many others in times of crisis, I can manage well. I have literally like saved people's lives. Like I have. And I don't say that with hubris, but like I have that capability to respond in a way that causes a good result in that way. But when she was talking about that and what it made me realize that is probably true of my determination not to be still is that behind that is if I stop and be still, then they're going to notice me. I'm going to be discovered. Mm-hmm. And then I will be judged or they will find fault because I basically grew up in a scenario where I was the outlier and I just did not, I couldn't do what they needed me to do. And so therefore I was always in trouble and I got beat for it. But if I wasn't there, if I had a job or I was out, that could prevent that from happening. Yeah. But I don't know how to allow myself to look at stillness in a different way. And not as a survival tactic, because that's what it was. And so I'm legit like panicked if I don't have something to do. Mm-hmm. Because it's something's bad going to happen. Mm-hmm. So how do I help myself through that?
That's an excellent question. So it sounds like you have a busy kid on your bus. Is the term busy kid okay?
Sure. Like okay. So my bus is double decker like Deborah's,
that's
I think.
Fine. Well, yeah, that's totally fine. So it sounds like you have a busy kid on your bus. And this busy kid has learned that when I am busy, I am safe.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you were to if you'll go with me here for a second, this will benefit everyone, but it does kind of require you to be vulnerable. Are you okay with that?
I'm gonna try.
Okay. So if you can go maybe if it helps to close your eyes, you can do that. But when you picture this busy part of you who has learned In order to be safe, I have to be busy. What do they look like? Is it a boy? Is it a girl?
Seven years old, short hair, page boy, wearing overalls into the ground. You know, and there was a switch, you know, and I can like label a very traumatic experience that totally flipped a switch from like recreational fun to dedicated activity.
Yeah.
And I miss her.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you picture this 7-year-old version of you with a page boy haircut wearing overalls. And what is her vibe? Like when you picture her in your mind and your imagination, this is the imagination as a portal to healing exercise. Okay. So when you picture this 7-year-old version of yourself, what's her vibe? What's she like?
I'll say gregarious. Like okay. I tenacious.
Okay.
My mother once I said to my grandmother, she's driving me crazy. Like, and my grandmother said to her, well, if she was boring, you'd be worried. Which okay. I thought was an interesting, you know, mm-hmm. but tenacious.
Okay.
You know, willing to just be adventurous.
Okay.
And that stopped. It stopped.
Yeah. So did a new part come on that's the busybody or the busy kid, or is she the busy kid?
No, she's the free kid.
Okay. All right. Great. So you've identified a free kid. So the free kid is seven years old, has a page boy haircut, wears overalls down to the ground. Can you, Nat, like, we can hold space for her. We're not going to leave her alone. We're going to put a pin in that. Can you shift into the busy kid? What is she like? How old is she? What does she look like?
She's like 8.
Okay.
She is doesn't sleep, wakes up early, tries to get out of the house as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. Just that disappearing, like I talked about, but never, but strategic, guarded is the word.
Yeah, she has to be smart.
Right. Yeah.
Survival.
So clever, but not, you know, but still that total survival.
But scared.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And not just never relaxed. Sure. Never relaxed.
So whenever you describe her and you picture her in your mind, does any part of your body light up?
Like I always feel it kind of right. Right where the xiphoid process is, if you know where that is.
Mm-hmm.
It just always, just so much pressure right okay. there.
So can you put your hand on that part of your body and just notice the pressure? And can you describe, is there any more to that sensation besides pressure? Is it hot or cold? Is it moving at all? Is it dense?
It's thick.
Okay.
It's dense.
Okay.
It has weight.
Sure. Yeah, what a heavy thing for a kid that age to carry, right? Like 8 years old and already you've got to like carry this big, huge thing. That's a lot. Right? That 7-year-old free kid doesn't get to be so free anymore. Because this new part has come on to protect you from getting punished. As you sit with that sensation, you have your hand there. Is it shifting? Is it intensifying, subsiding,
moving? It's up. It's in my throat now.
Okay, really, really common for those sensations to shift. So that's fine. It would also be fine if it didn't shift. So can you just place, can you follow it and just place your hand on your throat? Just follow it with your hand, wherever it moves, just follow it. So what does it feel like in your throat?
Oh, like constriction.
Okay.
Like it's hard to swallow.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Wouldn't it be so hard to swallow as an 8-year-old having this huge responsibility? Wouldn't that be hard to swallow?
Simple connection, but it makes so much sense.
Yeah. So if you could imagine this hard to swallow constriction sensation, it, as if it's inside of a balloon and you're blowing the balloon up around it. Okay. Just imagine that you're blowing a balloon up around this sensation and you're not trying to get rid of it. You're giving it space. You're saying like, hey, body, take up some space. This sensation can take up as much space as it needs to. I'm going to give you all the space in the world. Just notice.
It's going away a little bit. Feels lighter.
So let's reconnect with this busy kid. Now that that sensation is not quite so strong, just reconnecting with that kid. And if you can imagine her, like, what is she doing right now?
Like going, getting out of the house, just out of the house.
Okay.
Just so, any reason to be out of the house.
Sure. Yeah. So can you imagine your adult self entering the scene as if this kid is in a movie and you're playing this movie and now you, the adult higher self, is entering the scene and now you're with her. Can you imagine that?
Okay.
Okay. So you're with her. Will she let you get close to her?
Fuck no.
Okay. So stand as far away from her as you need to stand and just ask her, do you know that I grew up and became an adult? Just trust the first thing that comes in. You don't have to overthink it. Just trust.
See, that was part of my second question. We'll get to that in a minute.
Okay. Do you know that I grew up and became an adult?
I don't think she actually does.
Yeah, they usually don't. So can you just lovingly tell her, like, hey, I'm you this many years later. I grew up. I'm out of this house. I'm an adult now. And see if that helps her, like, soften a little bit. Is that feeling coming back up?
It's like I've trapped myself and I'm not actually stuck.
It's okay. No judgment. Just work with your part. Is she okay with you coming in and saying, hey, I grew up. Look at me. You're this many years later. We did it. We made it out of the house.
I'm sure she's skeptical, though. Okay. She doesn't trust anybody.
That's okay. That's okay. So just ask her, like, can you trust me? Even if just for a minute, can you just trust me to have a quick conversation with you and see if she's okay with that? And if she's not, we'll let her be for today.
I think that's probably a good place to leave it for today.
Okay. So the next time you're ready and you can do this on your own, all you have to do is call her up again. And by picturing her in your mind, it'll probably light up a part of your body. And again, just ask her permission. Is it okay if I get close to you and talk to you? And be consistent. Like, let this be like even a daily practice for you until she says yes. And when she says yes, and she will eventually say yes, I promise. But when she says yes, ask her, like, what would you rather be doing? If you're not so busy keeping me busy to protect me, what would you rather be doing? And very often these kids will say, like, I want to go play in the river. I want to go swing on the swings. I want to go make art. I want to play with the dolls, like whatever she says. And then ask her, like, is it okay if I take you to that place? And in your imagination, imagine you taking her by the hand and taking her to this place to do whatever it is that she would rather be doing, and let her know that she doesn't need the responsibility of keeping you busy to keep you safe anymore. That you're an adult now, you have that self energy, you're capable of doing this for yourself, and she gets to be an 8-year-old who gets to play. And maybe the free kid would like to come in and reteach her how to play. Maybe she needs to learn how to play from the free kid.
Maybe.
So if we can get these little parts of ours, these little kids on our bus, to go and do what they're supposed to do as kids instead of having all these adult responsibilities, then they don't try to hijack the bus all the time. Because they trust us to drive.
Right. That's a lot, Lindsay.
I'm not sorry.
Well, I wouldn't be sad, but way to enter the conversation, Jen. Okay.
That's great. But
the other thing I was going to ask that totally relates to the conversation we just worked through was when Lenka was on the group call last time, she kind of spoke about health anxiety, and then you said that catastrophizing is our method of creating safety and uncertainty. Mm-hmm. But then you said, I gotta go back and find it. You said that, like, but we have to tell ourselves that, like, even in insert worst case scenario, we have to bring our higher self energy to say that, you know, whatever happens, we can still trust ourselves.
Yeah.
And what I wrote after that was, I don't feel that.
Okay.
Like, I don't trust myself in this space. And I know that's a judgment. And, you know, and related to what we said before, I have tons of evidence where I can go, well, you fucked that up.
Mm-hmm.
Look what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that goes back to just, you know, the space we're on with the, you know, my family was highly judgmental. They still are. You know, I now am highly critical of myself. Because I've learned that behavior, and that's the pattern I see.
Yeah, of course.
And I don't, again, quite know how to look at things we've done or things I've done. And I don't know whether to give myself credit for it or just say, okay, that wasn't as bad as maybe you're making it out to be.
If that feels true for you, fine. But if you're trying to like gaslight yourself into being like, well, it wasn't that bad, then let's not do that.
Well, and that's like, I don't want to fake it, but I don't quite have the tools to, you know, I don't want to gaslight myself, but I also don't sit in a place where I can authentically tell, you know, tell, have a different story to give space to.
Mm-hmm.
If you're kind of aligning with what you're teaching us.
Can you, like, one time in your life where you made a decision and you trusted yourself?
I am very good. Like, sometimes people say, like, oh, well, is it true? Like, to ask yourself a question, well, is it true? I can make anything true. I have an amazing ability to, like, catastrophize truthfulness. I have that skill.
Okay. So maybe you have a catastrophization kit on your bus, too.
My bus is a special bus. Yeah.
Yeah. You've got a double decker bus too.
Oh my God. Maybe it has three or four levels. I don't know. But that's like, I have trouble looking at the way my life is and having security in the decisions I've made. And I do tie that into like where I place my worth. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily results, which play into it, but just like looking at something and going, okay, that wasn't, there's space for that to be okay.
Mm-hmm. That feels inauthentic to give yourself space for something to be okay.
Yes, it does a lot of times. Yeah.
Okay.
But it still goes back into their survival mode of just get it done. Just get it done.
Mm-hmm. Are you able to hold space for the possibility that even in your mistakes, even in all the feeling that you don't trust yourself, that you've still made it to this point in your life and that those things served you to get to this point in your life? And that can be okay, even if there's things that you wish you had done differently? Like an acceptance?
I'm kind of playing with this with my therapist too, because it is that word choice matters. Like, did I feel you are emphasizing as well? Like the words we choose are intentional, even if they're unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And giving myself permission to look at something and not judging it as good or bad or even okay is like, it just was, or it just is. That's a hard place.
You can't be curious and judgmental at the same time. So if you're not at the place where you can be like, well, it just is, like, that's what happened and I accept it. If you're not there yet, then at least can you replace the judgment with curiosity?
That's what I'm trying. Like, it's a turtle's pace, but that's like, you know, like I think it was Brandy was saying that you're in her head. And what's interesting to me, though, is in the space of my professional life, I can do this for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not give myself that same grace.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't judge them like I judge myself.
I wonder why that is.
I know. Isn't that interesting? What purpose does that serve?
Yeah. So what purpose does it serve? Hint, the answer is not nothing.
No. So.
What purpose does it serve, Jen? Why are you less deserving of the same grace that you will give to other people? Why are you so special to be less deserving of that?
Because that is an ego thing, though, still, just like what you said. Right. Okay. That puts that still the, oh, I'm so special, I'm not worth it, is still the ego ting.
Okay.
So I don't know. But that's why I'm here, though, folks. That's why I'm here.
You're doing great. Even if it's a turtle pace, it's still a pace. Like, and that's going to be more sustainable than like rapid, like, oh, I'm figuring it out really fast, right? Like, then there's no time to integrate. When you go slow, you have time to integrate these experiences. Yeah. That's really, really important.
And that's also like painful for me because I'm used to go, 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 go.
Yeah. The busy kid doesn't like the slow pace.
No. Because it's there's
so
more.
Your work is to connect with that busy kid and be consistent and like connect with her in your imagination, because your imagination is a portal to healing. It is a portal to your subconscious. You can trust whatever you imagine in there. So use your imagination to access that kid and see if you can start forming a relationship with her where she will trust you. Yeah. And then get her to a place where she feels safe to just be an 8-year-old child instead of an 8-year-old child who has all of this adult responsibility to protect you.
Yeah. But I think if I can get her to trust, then that'll break through the rest of it. Because she's probably holding the key to that.
Maybe.
I don't know.
We don't know until you get to know her a little bit more, right?
No, right. She's on the other side of the room right now.
That's okay. And Deborah, the same is true for you and your little Johnny. Like, connect in your imagination. Picture what he looks like. How old is he? What part of you is he? What is he trying to do to keep you safe that is really beyond his capabilities as a child? And what does he need to do so that he's not using all this energy driving your bus, trying to keep you safe? Same thing. Can you handle that? Anybody can do any of this with your parts. I'm not just talking specifically to Jen and Deborah.
Well, thank you, Lindsay.
Of course, Jen. Thanks for being here and sharing. Yeah. Mel, I think you're our last question for the night.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Yeah, so I just wanted to bring something up. This past Sunday, I dealt with something very triggering that was like very much outside of my window of tolerance. It has to do with cyber harassment. Kind of wanted to get your perspective on it because I know you've been like showing up online for a while now. So I'm on TikTok. I live stream every night, kind of just do it for fun. And I had people join on Sunday night that started making like claims that they were going to unalive me. And that had never happened before. Like, I'll just say it for what it is. They were making rape threats. And I was engaging with them for like almost 2 hours. I don't know. It was like multiple accounts joining. Usually, like, if people troll, well, okay, trolling is one thing and I'll block it. But this time I was like, wait, what? Because these people were like, we're going to find you. We're 100% serious. We're part of like an organization, like just going on and on and on, talking about what they're going to do to me. They told me to expect a call. And I'm just like, oh my God. So I'm just like, I honestly was dissociating. Like I kind of just froze up and I should have just gotten offline. I should have blocked those people. But because it was multiple accounts, I already knew like, oh, if I block them, they're just going to come back under new names. And TikTok did absolutely nothing. People were reporting and people were defending me in the comments being like, you know, basically like, what the fuck is going on? Like, what is wrong with you guys? And I even actually called the police while it was on my live stream. But they said, oh, just fill out a form online. And I felt kind of invalidated because I was like practically crying on the phone with the dispatcher. But I don't know, like, I'm still feeling pretty paranoid because like, I understand, like, it's so ridiculous what they were saying. Like, how are they going to find me? You know what I mean? But at the same time, they just were so adamant and they kept going on and on and on, like, insisting that they're going to do this to me and find me. And, like, I don't know what to think. And I just feel like there's nothing I can really do about it. And I'm just, I don't know. I'm just worried about my safety, but it sucks because these are just random people online.
Yeah,
dude, and it really got under my shoe, or under my skin. Sorry, somebody said, "Is your pick the shoes?" Like, but yeah. So I'm worried. Even though crappy. Like I've been telling people, and they're like, "Oh, I wouldn't believe anything those people have to say. They're full of crap. They're making empty threats." But I don't know why there's a part of me that just feels like they're serious. That feels like I'm gonna get a phone call, like, because they said, you know, like, we'll talk to you soon. Expect a call in 1 to 2 weeks. And it's just, it's so ridiculous. It's almost funny to me, but at the same time, I'm just like, what if I do get a call from some like random number? And like, I don't know. I know how ridiculous this sounds, but.
I mean, if you're scared, you're scared. That's not ridiculous. So
yeah, I'm
like, your fear is real, whether the threats are real or not, your fear about it is real. So like,
yeah.
That's totally understandable. I mean, yeah, I think ending the live stream and blocking all of those people probably would have been my first move.
Yeah.
But
agreed.
You know, you didn't do that and you were scared. So maybe you felt like you had to defend yourself or protect yourself or whatever. I mean, it really sucks that like TikTok did nothing and that the cops really didn't do anything.
Right.
So that really sucks. But like, I mean, on the one hand, I want to be like, yeah, it's probably not real. But then on the other hand, you hear about this crazy shit happening mm-hmm. and it actually is real sometimes. So like, I don't
exactly
want to count that at all. Is there any way like that you knew these people or like that they know where you live or that they know how to find where you live?
Well, like, here's what I'll say. I have no idea because these are just like, you know, they don't have any kind of identifying information in their profiles. They're just literally like troll accounts, basically. Like, a few of the accounts, it was some, you know, like either no profile picture or some stupid profile picture, and they had like zero followers and zero following. But then there was one person that joined that had a couple hundred. So I was like, okay, that's interesting. Yeah. And that was, and he was the one, or he or she, or whoever they are, were the ones that just like kept going on and on and on about like their intentions. Yeah, it's like, I don't know if they know me or if I know them. And people are saying,
screenshots?
I did take screenshots of everything. Yeah, like I don't know if they have my information. Like, yeah. I genuinely have no idea, or because it sounded like they were going to try to find out, because they're like, we're going to try to find your number. Like, it's just, I don't
is
understand.
Your like name, your whole name listed on your account, or like any kind of identifying information, or is your account pretty?
So, I would say there isn't really any identifying information. I just have Mel. So that's like short for Melanie. So, I mean, but there's people out there that, you know, they know how to, like I guess hackers or people out there that can like somehow find, because all they really have, or like to my knowledge, all they have is like, you know, okay, profile picture and username.
Yeah.
So with that information, how would they find anything out?
Yeah, but they'd have to be pretty smart hackers to do that, honestly. Like,
yeah.
I mean, if I were you, like I would save the screenshots. I would probably like find someone who works for TikTok that's an actual person to send it to. Like, that might take some digging, but like someone who's not just like support at TikTok.com or whatever, but like an actual real person, and like send them these things, and then you know, maybe don't live stream for a few days just to kind of let everything die down. And, you know, if you're not live streaming, they can't come on and harass you. So,
yeah, because I really felt so targeted by these people.
Sure, of course you did. Yeah. I mean,
and it's just like,
I haven't gone through near that level. I mean, I have been canceled online, and like I have had people like showing up in my DMs and screenshotting my work and then like posting it in their stories. And like, there's still accounts to this day with like highlight reels with my name on them talking about how I'm like a racist, like recruiter for the NXIVM sex cult. Like, it's ridiculous. But, I mean, you guys didn't know that. Surprise. Do you want to join my sex cult? that's really what I have you all here for. But so, yeah, I mean, but like, I tried reporting them to Instagram because they were clearly violating the terms and conditions. They were harassing me, stalking me, bullying me, like all kinds of things. Instagram literally did nothing. My followers were also reporting them. Instagram did nothing. I had them blocked. They were coming back from burner accounts. And like, I wasn't receiving threats like this. Like, this is more serious.
Yeah.
I honestly, if it were me, I would probably like go a little bit dark on my account for a bit, let it blow over, but also try to get in touch with someone like higher up at TikTok, or even like there's a, like an FBI, like cyber crimes, like line or a website that you can report this kind of stuff on too.
Yeah, I think that's something I'll do. I know they have like FBI offices throughout the state. So I was thinking of like giving a call to the local office. It's like pretty close to where I live, to see what they have to say. And then I can use LinkedIn to try to find, you know, people that work for TikTok. Because yeah, I know TikTok support probably won't do anything. Just considering how they responded to all of this.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this is, I'll say, the first time I made death threats, or not I made, oh my gosh, the first time I received death threats.
Yeah, so, that's like, crazy. I'm really sorry that happened.
My lives is, you know, they're pretty laid back and chill. I don't talk about anything controversial or hot button, none of that. I just kind of engage with people in my comments, and I don't know what the hell, like, they... I don't know. Like, I still don't understand what they want for me and why they would try to, you know, go out of their way to harm some random woman on the internet. And it, part of me just, like, people were being like, why would they do that? And I was like, I think it's just because I'm a woman. Like, that's...
I mean, they also could just have, like, way too much free time. It could be a bot. It could be a spammer. Like, you really don't know. So, block... go dark for a while, contact authorities
Well,
are appropriate. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, well, I will say I did deactivate that account, the one I told you about. I have another account, which is my main account that I've had like longer than this other one. I mean, they could like obviously I did go ahead and block those accounts that were harassing me on the other account so that those accounts couldn't find the main one. But yeah, I mean, I did. Like even after that happened, I was still going live. I was just going live on my main account, and I haven't dealt with any of that. But it just it sucks because it's like I do enjoy going live, and I don't want to like just quit because of this stuff. But it was so incredibly triggering. But at the but it's the internet, and it's like, what can we really do?
Well, I don't know. I'm not
Yeah.
a cybersecurity person. Like, what I would do is what I told you, and I'm really sorry that happened to you. Like, I'm sorry that that's scary, and I'm sorry it happened. And I mean, I think odds are they're probably just some people with way too much time on their hands that are trying to get a rise out of you and like trying to get inside your head. But I mean, I still think if you need to take it seriously and report it somewhere else, like to people who can actually do something, like that's probably smart.
Well, thank you for listening. Yeah, I
Yeah,
just
of
wanted
course.
to let it out and vent about that, but I do appreciate it.
Yeah, of course, Mel. Thanks for sharing. I'm really sorry
Yeah.
that happened to you. That's crazy. There's some fucking crazy people in this world. Okay. Anyone else before we hop off? Or most everybody's gone, so we'll probably say that we are done for tonight. Thank you all so much for coming, for staying to the bitter end. We've got a group call on Tuesday morning at 10 Central. So any other questions that you have related to triggers or your little kids on your bus that you make contact with and you want to talk about, or maybe we can work with on the call, that would be fine. But if there's nothing else, then I'll tell you all good night, and I hope you have a lovely evening, and I love you all. Bye-bye.